Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Tia, will you ring the bell for me three times? Yes, I would love that if you would. While the people come on in. So we are the light of this world. In the Sufi tradition, they say when we incarnate with light and love. And when we make our transition from this world, we take the light with us and we leave the love behind. And so what's so sweet about that reflection is when you take our reality to be one of light and love, we're an energy. We're an eternal energy who has this human experience. And so could we take this human experience and put it in service to this spirit that we really are, knowing that spirit is deathless and eternal? I remember the very first funeral I did here was Sandy, Barbara's sister, who died in a tragic car accident with two young daughters. And just like my very first sermon was on the resurrection, well, my first funeral was, what am I going to say about this beautiful young mother? And I pulled out the Bhagavad Gita, the strangest text, and it said, spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And with that one little sentence, I was able to feel Sandy with me, and almost without exception, everyone who makes their transition kind of lives in my heart. And so because this is Resurrection Sunday, it's Easter Sunday, could we evolve into a greater realization of what this resurrection is? In the Science of Mind, that very first Sunday in 1989, I opened the Science of Mind text and I looked up the word resurrection, and Ernest Holmes says, each of us must have our own resurrection. Well, then I put the book down and I thought, holy cow, I'm going to take a tradition that's 2,000 years old and I'm going to personalize it? Well, I've been doing that for 35 years, and it's been the greatest gift, I can't tell you. Sitting in the garden, watching these bulbs come up from the ground, seeing these trees that I've planted 30 years, some of them, and they're old trees, and every spring when they come back, it's like they're saying, I'm still here. This life never ended. And I have this kind of tantric experience with them. They're not separate from me. I'm 75 now, and it's a challenge to do the heavy lifting in the garden, but this young 22-year-old man came over to help me with the garden. Only $75 an hour. What a bargain. I used to do it for $10 an hour. But anyway, he's 22, and I said, we got some heavy lifting to do, my friend. His name is Tristan. And so Tristan was out there, and there was a beautiful Japanese maple that her roots were bound, and she was floating in water. She needed help. And so as I pulled this Japanese maple out, her roots had pushed through the holes in the pot, and oh, she was compromised, and I'm praying, and I'm talking to her, and we put her in a new place in the garden. You talk about a resurrection. Her name is Sue now, and Sue is a happy little girl. And I was resurrecting the whole damn garden last Thursday. I mean, we dug up plants and moved them, and you know, I've learned this incredible principle. When I tend something, it's tending me. I learned it first with the pug. When I take care of this blind and deaf pug, and it is a full-time job, he's tethered to me, he can't walk anymore, but if I position him, he can stand. Now, he can't move his foot here, he can't move his foot there, but when he has to go to the bathroom, he kind of tries to figure out, he can get the sphincter to work, but can he get the legs under him in just the right position so he doesn't fall in the poop? And so it's my sacred practice. My whole life is about helping him do his business. And then the rest of the time is tending this very demanding garden. And what I've learned from both of them is that I think I'm taking care of them, they're taking care of me. Isn't that the greatest paradox? I think I'm taking care of this congregation, but guess what? You all are taking care of me. Just in your willingness to see me as I've evolved over these 35 years, I came here as a frightened little science of minder, and now I've become this crazy mystic who sees God in everything. And I remember when I was 40 years old, brand new minister, I met a man named Stuart Grayson. He was the minister in New York City Church. And he says, you know,
They say that every older minister needs a younger minister to inspire him, and every younger minister needs an older minister to inspire him. So would you be willing to be my younger minister? And I said, sure. And then he said, you know, the science of mind is written on three levels. There's the mental science, that's the lowest science. Change your thinking, change your life. You know, that gets a bit the self-help teaching, let's face it. But then he said, we evolve into the religious science. There is a power greater than you, and you can use it. But he said, that's still dualistic thinking. And then ultimately, you arrive at the mystic awareness that it's all one, that there's only one here. And he says, that is the goal, to evolve to this place of realization that there's only one here. So my goal, if there is a goal in ministry, is to arrive at that place where I see God in everything. And then to realize that this resurrection, we were given a myth when we were little children. That was the religious day of the year. We went on Easter Sunday. If we didn't, we weren't right with God. You had to go on Easter Sunday. And I had, you know, the Stations of the Cross. Do you know who created the Stations of the Cross? I found out when I was in my 40s. St. Leonard. So when Trey and I were in Boston and we went to the St. Leonard's Cathedral, Trey said, I've got to get a t-shirt from this place. So I have St. Leonard's Cathedral and the Stations of the Cross, you know, the places that Jesus stopped when he was, I didn't realize I'm named after the saint, but I'll take it because, you know, work with what you've got and St. Leonard along the way. But having said that, isn't it wonderful to know that we get to continually evolve in this lifetime? And it doesn't end. It doesn't, this journey doesn't end. We had Rocco Errico, who is an Aramaic scholar. He came to the center when we were at the old center. And that was 25 years ago. And he insisted on speaking about what the resurrection really means. He said it's not the physical resurrection of Jesus. He said the Christ resurrected in all of his disciples. And if you see the story of Paul on the road to Damascus, he never met Jesus, but he was on the road to Damascus, and all of a sudden he was taken over by this light, and that was the Christ consciousness. So could we evolve into realizing that that universal Christ lives within us? Barbara Marx Hubbard said, we are evolving from Homo erectus to Homo sapien to Homo universalis, the universal human. So could we put ourselves in this flow of evolution in consciousness? This month of March, I'd love to explore one salient idea as it works on me throughout the month. And the idea of this month was the art of being. We're a human being. And so could we know what it's like to be established in that flow of who we really are? And what are we being? I've discovered that what we are really is this love, this divine love. There's the four abodes of the divine from Jack Kornfield in his book, The Wise Heart. And these four abodes, the first one is love. And he says, when you know that what you are is love. So he says, when love meets suffering on the planet, well, then that love moves into compassion. And then he talks about the peaceful heart, the wise heart. And when we live in this peace, well, then we accept life with equanimity. We don't say that this is wrong or this is right, this is good or this is bad, or this is evil. We don't have that. It's what is. So there's an equanimity in this peace. You accept life on life's terms. And sometimes when life gives you a crucifixion, you say, okay, I need a crucifixion in order to have a resurrection. And I remember it was Marianne Williamson who would say, get off the cross, we need the wood. And that was her sense of humor. So many of us spend our whole life crucifying ourselves until, but with that ending of something is a beginning, a new beginning. And so could we open to this universal Christ within us and let go of the victim of yesterday and step into the co-creator with the universe at this stage of life? So co-creating with God at this stage, it's not as something separate that I'm manipulating. It's not like I'm doing a treatment to affect an outcome. My life becomes the treatment. My life becomes the prayer. And I've learned that how I do anything is how I do everything. So how I tend that little blind and deaf pug is how I tend all of you. And if you need to go to the bathroom out here, I will hold you and position you and speak sweetly to you, because it requires so much patience, so much acceptance, and so much love. You know, you can jokingly say, well, maybe his life is compromised. You can put him down and get a new model. I've heard that said to me by several people. And I said, well, when I get to that stage, are you going to put me down and get a new model too? She nods her head. You got to do what you got to do. Or maybe not. And so I'm learning to see life in such a different way at age 75. To me, it's a blessing. And it's like wine. I think the older it gets, the finer it gets, the more sacred it becomes. Hank is one of my favorite sacred people. He comes in here on his walker. Yes, handsome Hank is one of my heroes. There he is. And if you saw what he came in with and see where he is now, that man has evolved. And it's because of his beautiful wife, Judy. They informed me that last Sunday was, I had married them 33 years ago last Sunday. So isn't that a beautiful anniversary to remember? Thank you for reminding me of that, Judy. I remember doing the wedding. Yeah, so this month, the first week, I spoke about what we are God seeds. And so there's a lovely little book called The Wisdom of Seeds by Llewellyn Von Lee. And his wife, Anat, says, the seed is a sacred symbol of that which is always giving birth in us. And the beautiful thing about the wisdom of seeds is they never get old. They're always at that threshold of giving birth to a new order of life. I have so many seedlings in my greenhouse window upstairs, and I rotate them every day. And I want to put them outside because they're getting leggy. And then my sweet husband says, it's going to be cold on Tuesday and in the 30s. And so fear is operating with this desire to put them in the yard. And what if life is always like that? There's some seed idea that's wanting to start to grow within you, but then there's this doubt and this hesitation. Should I plant that? Do I have the soil to grow it, the consciousness to sustain it? It's a wonderful question to live in. So what we are is God's seedlings, and could we, at whatever age, be constantly nurturing the divinity within us? The divinity within us. Krishnamurti, in oneself, you talk about a seed. I was 22 years old. Someone sent me a card from California, and on that was a quote from Krishnamurti. This quote changed my life because it woke me up. And the quote was, in oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and to learn, well, then the door is there and the key is in your hand. But no one gives you the key or the door to open except yourself. So at 22, I went within, I think probably for the first time in my life. And what I met was a lonely young man who didn't have a clue what it was all about. He was the victim of life because he hadn't found himself. So that was the greatest gift of self-reflection. So what if we can look back on this long-lived life and see how we've all continued to evolve? The second week, I spoke about resolve to evolve. Could that be our resolution every year, that I'm going to continue to unfold? I mentioned to the revealing service when I studied with the Sufis, they said, and they use metaphors so beautifully, they talk about the wisdom of the galb, the wisdom of the heart. And I'm going to speak about the wise heart in just a second. But they say there are 70,000 veils of ignorance. And they say when we wake up, they say, make sure you lift the veils one at a time and make sure you don't tear the veils. So for these 35 years, I've been lifting the veils. It's not about me. It's never been about me. And so then you move from the me to the we to the all. It's all the one. And so that takes away this self that we think we are. There's this wonderful book called The Story of Gaia by a PhD from Oxford. Come on in, guys. You can sit wherever you want. Do you want to sit in the front? And you can play with the penguin. Here's my little girlfriend. Oh, here she comes. There you go. He wants to sit with you, and I'll hold your unicorn.
Oh, nice.
Oh, thank you. I went from a penguin to a unicorn. Do you know that this is the national plant, the national animal of Scotland? This is their national animal, Scotland. They must have unicorns in Scotland with little pink and blue. Maybe it's a trans. Oh, I don't know. It's just, you got to goof on it. You know, when I went to New York City, I was so serious and life was such an ordeal. And the lady in the next cubicle, she had blonde hair. She had big blue eyeshadow over her eyes. Her name was Linda Tadaldi, and she was from the Bronx. And she said, and I would get so upset about things. And she'd say, David, goof on it. Just goof on it. And you know, it saved my life. If you can goof on something, you can set yourself free because you have a sense of humor. And then, you know. Yeah, so that was the second week, is to resolve to evolve. The third week, I talked about a new way of living life. What if this new way of living life could be just say yes to life on life's terms instead of saying, I got to live the life that I'm meant to be. Because you might find yourself someday sitting in a prison and say, okay, here's where I am. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Birdman of Alcatraz. It's the true story of this man, Robert Stroud, who, when he was thrown in jail, he started making friends with the birds that would come to the window. And that's why they called him the Birdman of Alcatraz. And he would tend the birds, and he wrote several books on the rehabilitation and the sustaining. So he found meaning in a seeming disadvantageous lifestyle. And then they moved him all the way to Alcatraz, which is outside of San Francisco. I've been there several times. They call it the Rock. It's pretty austere. And that's where he spent the rest of his life. And at the end of the movie, my favorite moment is the warden of the prison, played by Carl Malden, goes in to see him. By this time, he's probably my age. And he's written a new book about the rehabilitation of prisoners. And this is the warden's. And then Robert Stroud said to him, he says, to rehabilitate comes from the Latin word habile, which means to restore dignity. And he says, you have done everything but restore dignity to us here in Alcatraz. And so when I heard that, you know, to rehabilitate someone is to give them their dignity back. So when I work in the garden now, and I know Greg does this with these old plants that need help, I realize I'm rehabilitating them. There was a weeping spruce that was growing underneath a maple tree, and it wasn't getting any light. So when Tristan was there, I said, Tristan, we're going to dig up the spruce. Oh, you're going to dig up the spruce. So he dug up the spruce, and we carried her to the back where she could have full sun, and we dug a deep hole. We put the spruce in. He went home, and then I realized he hadn't covered her adequately. So I'm going around all making sure all the roots are covered, and I watered in, and I did a little treatment. So now I have a rehabilitated spruce, and I have a rehabilitated little Japanese maple, both of them giving a new lease on life. So what if we could extend that own courtesy to ourselves, a new way of living, saying yes to the life that you've been given? I was doing one of our revealing services, and this young man came right out of rehab, and you could tell he was as fragile as he could be. And I said, so what have you learned having been in rehab? And he says, the one thing I've learned is that I have to accept life on life's terms, not on mine. And I said, thank you for that gift. You just planted a seed. So when life gives me these challenges that feel like a crucifixion, could I know that there's a resurrection in store for me and get off the cross? And then we get to say, what is the cross that I'm nailed to? It's just a metaphor. Play with the metaphors. Last week, I talked about the gifts. What gifts are you bringing here? And the ultimate gift we can bring is ourself, our authentic self. Be who you is and not who you ain't. Because if you ain't who you is, you is who you ain't. But if you is who you is, well, then you're giving the gift of you to the world. So what if all our children could be raised to know that you're a unique expression of God's love and that you get to find out what that is? God don't make no retreads. Thank you. God doesn't make duplicates. God makes unique expressions of the love. So anyway, one of my favorite books of all time was the Yanamkara. And because I'm 75, I decided to turn to the end of the book. This is about having the soul friend. In order to have a soul friend, you first have to find the soul. You are a soul with a body, not a body with a soul. And then Emerson, if you read Emerson, we are the oversoul, which is the one soul. And then you, in Hinduism, the Atman and the Brahman are one. Atman is the soul, but the Brahman is the big kahuna, the all that is. So we're all part of that. So in this Anamkara, and you're all my Anamkaras, this is what he says about getting older. Wisdom then, as we age, and we're here to harvest the wisdom of life. Wisdom then is a deeper way of knowing. Wisdom is the art of living. In rhythm with your soul, in rhythm with life, and in rhythm with the divine. Wisdom is the way that you learn to decipher the unknown, and the unknown is our closest companion. So, John O'Donohue said, wisdom is the art of being, the art of being courageous, the art of being generous, the art of being accepting of the unknown, and being able to decipher and recognize the treasures inherent in the unknown. Imagine, at this age, Skip, we're still teachable. We're still open to the great mystery. And we don't have all the answers. I love that. So at the end of this little section, he says, wisdom is often associated with the harvest time of life. So it's time to get out there harvesting, Sylvia. It's about time now. The harvest time of life. That which is scattered has no unity. Whereas that which is gathered comes home to unity. Chris, Skip, and I were talking about how these religions, East and West come together. They're not meant to be separate. So wisdom, then, is the art of balancing the known with the unknown, the suffering with the joy, and it is a way of linking the whole of life together in a new and deeper sense of unity, to put it all together. It's not meant to be separate. Lastly, our society would be very well advised to attend to the wisdom of, guess what, old people. Society would do well to listen to the wisdom of old people. Now, I'm not saying I'm old, and I'm not saying you're old, but he's saying with age, inherent within that comes a certain depth, a certain experience. Lastly, older people are the great treasure houses of wisdom in this world. They call them the elders for some reason. So I thought that was kind of nice after 35 years. We're here to become the elders of the tribe and discover that inherent wisdom that is learned through a life well lived. How long have I known you, Greg? You just keep evolving and evolving, and now he's talking about love. What he is love. Those four great abodes. There's the love, the compassion, the peace, and the joy. And so when peace and love meet happiness, it becomes joy. So we're in this kind of alchemy of life, working with those four dynamic abodes in whatever we do. This is my gospel right now. Wanda Gale gave it to me on my birthday, and it's called The Master Teacher Within. And he talks about the wisdom of the heart chakra as the place that is the go-to place. And he does it in such a way that I just found it delicious. So I wanted to share this with him. It's called The Kingdom Within the Heart, or also called The Garden of the Heart. Now, I'm a gardener. I'm a dancer and a gardener, those two things. When I studied dance, it set my soul free. And in fact, I'm going to close this with a dance that you're all going to participate in. Kim wanted me to go dancing with her, but this is our dance, Kim. It's going to be a dance. We're going to dance and bring the prayer into our bodies so that the mind and the body and the heart all come together in a little dance. I'll do that at the end. But this is about the garden. And so he says, go sit in the garden. It's all a garden. And he says, and when you sit there under a tree, you can find that the tree is showing you the presence. I mean, literally, when I sit in the garden, it is a reflection of divine love. I put so much love into it, it now comes back. And the one thing you know about love, it's reciprocal. What you sow is what you're going to reap. So I think that I put all this love into this garden. But what do you think the garden is doing to me? It's loving me from every corner. I remember Anastasia came over to visit on the porch one time, and I just had my sister's ashes, and I took a little bit of her ashes and put them in every house plant, and I think I gave her a plant with my sister's ashes in. And you know what? It's so nice to see her moving out into the world. And she was happy, because I asked her, she's in a little baggie, where do you want to go? She says, I want to go in all your house plants so I can be with you in every room. I said, okay, so you're a little here, you're a little there. And you know, she's with me all the time. Well, this is crazy. I don't know where the wisdom is this. Oh, the garden. There is the kingdom within the heart that can neither be seen nor understood. Eyes were not made to see such detail, and the mind was not designed to understand such grandeur. Your mind can't comprehend the wisdom of the heart. But the heart itself, the resting place of the kingdom I am describing, feels that which could never be seen by the human eyes, and comprehends that which could never be understood by the human mind. So to experience the wisdom of the heart knows oneness. And Llewellyn von Leem, one of my mystical teachers, he said, you cannot think your way into the divine. You must feel your way into it. You know, you feel the love when you hold the penguin in your hands, don't you? Because the penguin is pure love. I feel the love from the unicorn, reminding me to be unique and different and not be afraid to wear purple and pink and let your horn shine. Okay, as you sit there, you become aware of presence sitting in the garden. You become aware of a sense of love and warmth that fills your heart. Feel your way into that connection of the heart. You know without a doubt that you're in the presence of the beloved. It's all the beloved. Huh. And then I hear Rumi, out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, there is this field. It's that field of love. And he says, when the soul lies down in that field, words are not necessary. Even the idea, each other, does not exist. And then he says, I will meet you there. So when we're meeting in this garden of the heart, kingdom of the heart, we feel the love that unites us in the one love, the one life, and we just rest as that, feeling a connection to the all. Every little raindrop that falls have a meaning. You know, you begin to You begin to get very one with everything. So you know without a doubt that you're in the presence of the Beloved, and you feel a deep connection to this divine presence, and you realize that you've always been connected to it, even if you were not aware of it. I was the most connected to the Beloved when I was about your age, and I would go and sit on the golf course, and I would be talking to flowers. I literally would start merging with the flowers. You could say I was certifiable, but really I was a little mystical kid who was connecting. Oh, I had a thing for butterflies like you wouldn't believe. Oh, I thought they were magical. They went through a transformation. You talk about a resurrection. They were a worm crawling along. They built this cocoon, and then they had to have the strength to, and you know what happens when they go in that cocoon? They become liquid. Literally, the caterpillar becomes liquid, and they have what they call imaginal cells, and these imaginal cells recreated themselves, and they had to have enough strength and courage to bite out of that thing that was encasing them in order to stand as the bona fide butterfly. Nikos Katsenzakis, who was a Greek philosopher, said, "The saddest day of my life was walking across the island of Crete when I saw a caterpillar seeking to get out of this chrysalis that it had made. So I put my hands around the chrysalis, and I started breathing the warmth of my air to help the butterfly. And all my attempts to help the butterfly didn't have the strength to get out of the cocoon, and he didn't make it. And he said, it was the saddest day of my life. Had I left the butterfly alone, it would have mustered the strength to get out of the cocoon. But he was codependent. Any of you codependents out there, think twice before you try to rescue somebody. I'm just saying. Anyway, you realize that this journey to God is not a difficult one. But rather, he says, it's a simple one. All you need to do is sit in the garden of your heart. What do you need to do, Carol?
Sit in the garden of your heart.
Just sit in the garden of your heart. And then let that love flow. All you need to do is sit in the garden of your heart and allow the Beloved to reveal herself to you. It's all the Beloved. One of my prayers, when I was really so steeped with Llewellyn, I had only one prayer. I would say, Beloved, this life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. And then I could be used. Use me, O God. I stand for you, and here I'll abide as you show me. All. So what if we could surrender and say, this life belongs to you, this greater intelligence, use it. And then everything is your practice. How you do anything is how you do everything. You know this is not the end of your journey, but rather it's the beginning. You've taken the first step on this path, and this will lead you to a state of oneness with all of creation. It's all your lover. It's all you. Everything is here for you. And then you hear Emma Curtis Hopkins. This too is good, whatever it is. This too is for God. And in this holy instant, I make a demand to see the blessing. Yeah. Show me the blessing in whatever arises. So he goes on to say, you smile to yourself as you realize that this journey to God is not a destination. This is really good stuff. It's not a place you get to and then you've arrived, you're home. No, that I've arrived, I'm home. In every breath, you get to go home. In every breath, it's always happening. It's not a goal you get to. It's a reality that you exist. So you smile to yourself, realizing that the journey to God is not a destination, but rather, I love this, it's a never-ending journey. That was a story about a dog, wasn't it? A dog and a cat, yeah. It's a never-ending journey that will bring you closer and closer to the truth of who you are, and this will remain with you for eternity. Once you arrive at the realization, in Sanskrit, tatvam asi, thou art that, that's all there is that. And then you go home. You don't need ayahuasca to get there. It may help. You know, we've had drugs inducing this state for so many years, but you don't need the drug. That was the story of Ram Dass. He was Mr. LSD. Then he went to India, studied with his guru, and came back and said, I don't need a drug to take me to this enlightened place. That enlightened place is just waiting for me. So he ends this with a little poem. I'll give you this as a gift. Within the heart lies a kingdom unseen, unknown to the mind, but felt by the soul. The Beloved, residing so serene within you, where peace and harmony roll. The Beloved's in here, where peace and harmony roll. That's that seed. The willow tree, sheltering from the heat, invites us to sit on this divine bench. So we're having communion with the tree. A presence is felt, love and warmth now to greet within, with deep connection, eternal and fine. So sitting on a bench, a divine bench, having tantric communion with a tree, we feel this connection to the one that was always there, just waiting for us to turn to it. In this stillness, which is the language of God, A oneness then is revealed. We're one with it. A key to happiness, the path to God. A journey not hard, but one simply sealed in the garden of the heart where now we trod. We just needed to take that walk into the garden of heart and to find it was waiting there all along. Isn't that great? Leaving the garden, we now carry within gratitude, joy, and contentment in tow. We're happy. We've had that communion sitting in the garden. The journey not over, but now begins a never-ending path where truth now flows. You know, that beautiful word truth comes from the Greek word, which means that which unhides itself. So if you play with that, if the truth is in here all along and it unhides itself, it reveals itself when you get intimate with that still small voice within and you learn how to listen. Yeah. Be still and know that I am God. Not think. Be still and know that I am. I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. So all we need to do is to become still, open the heart, feel this love that's always there, feel the peace out of which it emerges. When we meet suffering, we notice that love evolves into compassion. And compassion isn't sympathy. That's not where you're feeling sorry for someone. Compassion is where your heart opens and you want to put your arms around them. You want to hold them. I have compassion for worms on the sidewalk. Trey, we were down at the beach once. It was in Florida. And the horseshoe crabs were all on the beach and they were all piled up on top of each other. And Trey was saving the horseshoe crabs. He'd pick one up and carry it to the water. Pick another one up and carry it to the water. Well, I Googled it up and they were having an orgy. So anyway, I'm sure that the horseshoe crabs had another story to tell, but he was doing it with a good intention. For the journey to God is not a place. The journey within is to love, and that's where we race. So the journey to God is not in a place. It's a place that we have within, and so could we open to that? So yeah. So let me do that little up. Should we do that song?
Yep.
And then we'll do a little closing meditation, and then we'll do it. So I want you to stand. I was at a Silmar one year, and they talked about how they were bringing our teaching. Oh, thank you. We were bringing our teaching to South America, and they were taking it in particular to a prison. And they wanted to show them how we do spiritual mind treatment. So the first step of treatment is the recognition of the one. The second step of the treatment is the unification with the one. The third statement of treatment is a declaration. And then there's a, what it is that you realize. Then there's a gratitude step that it's already so, and a release step, basically five steps. But here's how they did it. They would say, reaching up, you bring down the presence right in your heart. It's a connection with source. Then you unite with that presence. So the second hand comes in. Then you create a container. This is the only choreography. One hand goes on top, the other goes. Then you expand. I've got to create it. This is the container. This is the declaration step. Then you move your arms up, receiving more of the grace, and then you bring it into your heart. With gratitude, you bow, and then the release step is you give it back to the world. So the words are going to do, well, have a song. So it goes like this. I am so blessed. Bring it down. I am so blessed. You bring it together. Unite. I am so grateful for all that I have. That's it, you. I am so blessed, open to the savvy, the rarefied energy of spirit. I am so blessed, bring it into your heart. I am so grateful. I am so blessed. You give it back to the world. Okay, so we ready?
I am so blessed. I am so blessed. So grateful for all. So blessed, I am so blessed. So grateful.
Give it away.
I am so blessed.
One more time.
I am so blessed.
sitting on a pen. Pam, would you ring the bell? One ding. The mindfulness bell is there to take us into that place of stopping. Oh, for whom the bell tolls for thee. And in that sacred stopping, we observe the wise heart within ourselves, that repository of love. Ah, and we feel the love in this room. The love that's all around and the love that's within are not separate. We acknowledge how blessed we are by declaring it to the universe. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. And then in that blessed consciousness, we give it all back to our own self, because there's only one here. And so we begin to discover that giving and receiving are two sides of the same coin. But we cannot give the love until we receive the love. And we're receiving the love from every flower that smiles at us. I have a beautiful piece of art in my garden, and it says, "The earth laughs in flowers." And that's a quote by Emerson. And so when the flowers come up in the spring, I see them smiling at me, and I feel that blessing yet again. And then what we sow is what we reap. As we sow compassion, we reap compassion. As we sow kindness, we reap kindness. And so we're in this beautiful dance of reciprocity, of giving and receiving. So we go deeper into that place of resonance with the one that knows no other. And we feel our way into belonging, being the longing and longing for the being. That longing that we have within our soul is the longing to go home, to return to our true nature. It's a divine longing. And so when that ache to go home gets stronger, well, that's an opportunity to surrender and to open and to trust and allow. And then life becomes this beautiful dance, this never-ending dance of going home and meeting ourself there. Sometimes we meet the shadow, and we bring the shadow into the light, and we let it know that we're there for this part of ourselves that somehow has been denied or repressed. And so we become a whole human being, W-H-O-L-E, whole human being. Dr. Ernest Holmes said, it's the perception of wholeness that is all healing. So when our perception can arise to the level where we feel this wholeness, even inherent within the dysfunction, even in the discord, that perhaps is that which needs to fall away so that this resurrection can take place within us. And so this resurrection is a rebirth that is always happening. And so we go into the cave of our heart right now. And we observe who wants to step out of that cave into the world to shine her light, to be who you are, to do your own dance and express who you are uniquely. The theme for this Sunday is to express yourself. And I would refine that by saying express the self that knows it is everywhere and nowhere at the same time. It is spirit and soul that is within us and that we are also within. It's the drop in the ocean that awakens to that it's really the ocean. And then you hear Rumi again, oh drop, give it up, the ocean for a drop. Oh, to be wooed by the ocean. And so we smile then to this light within that is part of the one light, to this love within that knows no other. And when it looks through our eyes, it sees the love everywhere mirrored in the world, because it's our own self that we're coming to recognize. And this is the place called home. So we have arrived. We are in this sacred place of being, where spirit is being revealed through each one of us, shining through your eyes, living in your smile and creating through your will and intention to bring the beauty that we find inherent within us to the world. So it all becomes a love affair, the one with herself, endlessly renewing, revealing. And then we hear this beautiful little twinkling of music. Rajaka, dormez-vous, come se natina, da 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 da. I don't speak, but that's okay. And then you hear Linda Tedaldi, goof on it, David, goof on it. And then life becomes this beautiful playground of discovery. And the truth unhides herself yet again. And the truth sets us free to be who we are. How glorious, how wonderful, how sacred. We smile to the garden of the heart, knowing that these seeds of potential and possibility are already planted, and they grow in their own right timing. And the one thing a gardener knows is to be patient on this journey. It takes time for the seeds to gestate and put down roots. It takes time for the seeds to push through the soil. It takes time for the leaves to reach up to the light. And it takes time to grow and flower and ultimately bear fruit. This is the dance that we're all engaged in. Oh, in the garden of the heart. And so it is. And there are no accidents. Huh? That was a little wake-up call.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.